Welcome back to the Gaming News Canada Show podcast. I'm your host, Steve McAllister. After a week's hiatus for a little bit of rest and relaxation, we're tickled to return by bringing back the GNCS gang, or the Fab 3 of this august media enterprise. That said, we welcome back our sports betting and gaming industry insiders slash experts, Amanda Brewer, Chris Abbott, and Phil Gray. Amanda, welcome back, and great to get everybody back together here.
Thanks, Steve. It's lovely to be reunited after such a short break. I didn't have time to miss anyone.
And Phil Gray joins us from Montreal, where it looks, Phil, like you will not be enjoying any Stanley Cup playoff action in your city come next month.
Well, no, but Steve, you know, I was born in Toronto, so I bleed the blue and white.
There you go. And Chris Abbott, are you joining us from an island, a southern spa, or are you back in the GTA these days?
No, frigid Toronto after a quick sojourn to Halifax last week, which was also not tropical, but it's always good to get back to the East Coast. And Phil, if you're going to follow the Leafs in the playoffs, you'll get four more games than Montreal. So that's unbelievable. That's great.
Well, I was born in 1964, so I can say I saw at least one cup, Chris.
first shot fired. Well, listen, let's get right to it's great timing to do this, and there is breaking news on this Thursday morning that we're recording the podcast, and there's gambling ties. I'll do a quick summary of the story, and just want to emphasize this is a story that still has a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of conflicting information out there, but I guess in the short version is the interpreter for LA Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani was fired yesterday in Korea, where the Dodgers were opening the Major League Baseball regular season, over questions surrounding at least $4.5 million in a wire transfer sent from Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation. The interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, apparently incurred the gambling debts to a Southern California bookmaking operation that's under federal investigation in the U.S. And this is reporting that's being done by Tisha Thompson at ESPN. Mizuhara, looks like he lost his job after reporters start asking questions about the wire transfers. There's a chance that Ohtani may speak about this at some point today. He wasn't available for comment yesterday. But there's a lot of, as I said, there's a lot of conflicting information. I guess where I'd like to start, maybe with you, Phil, is just, again, I think the knee-jerk reaction from some people out there will be this is what happens when you know, because of sports betting advertising on TV, and this is a black mark on Major League Baseball, and that this is a disaster. Maybe based on the information you have so far, Bill, Phil, you can put this in some context.
Yeah, it could certainly have far-reaching implications for, you know, the image of MLB and betting, you know, across major sports in North America. This is what they always said they were afraid of. But again, I mean, we don't know all the details. What I find interesting was the inference that the interpreter thought his bets were going through DraftKings. So did Mr. Boyer out in California have a number of beard accounts at DraftKings and he was channeling the money through there? And as Chris said, you know, earlier in our mail leading up to this, you know, who lets somebody run up a $4.5 million debt, you know, especially a private bookmaker? So was it his own liquidity, Mr. Boyer, or was he going through, other, you know, tier one books? That's going to be interesting to find out. And I guess he let him run up that credit because he knew right away that he was involved with Ohtani, and Ohtani will be good for it, I guess, was his thinking. But certainly why he would take that kind of action with someone, you know, with Major League Baseball is beyond me. That just makes no sense whatsoever.
Hey, Amanda, any quick initial thoughts on just reading or hearing what you've seen so far today?
Yeah, like total silver lining. I mean, he admitted he understood he could not bet on baseball. So, I mean, like, I'm clapping because it means MLB, you know, when these regulations started, you know, coming in, as states were starting to allow wagering, one of the big problems had always been the fear that some of the sports leagues are really slow to educate their players. So, you know, a little tongue in cheek, but at least he understood he couldn't play bets. He couldn't place bets on baseball. So at least we know there's some player education happening with MLB. But I think, you know, turning to a more serious note, I mean, the fact that he got caught means there's at least some system of checks and balances that's working. And, you know, what you want is this activity to be kind of coming out under the light, not hidden in the shadows. But it sounds like Mr. Boyer's in a ton of trouble. It sounds like he's a known entity anyway. And if this just allows more light to be kind of shone on the nooks and crannies that still exist, unfortunately, in this industry, then that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I do think that, you know, it points also to the problem of, you know, big places like California not having legal options yet. And we all know in the absence of legal options, people will go and still find the illegal ones. So I think there's a lot of different angles that you can sort of run with this story on, because it introduces a lot of different things that are still issues in this industry.
Chris Abbott?
Well, I think Amanda raised a good point in that, you know, there are and traditionally have been plenty of bad actors in the industry before regulation. And if some of them, you know, regardless of how long it takes, are being exposed or having their operations stopped or what have you, then I think that's actually a plus for regulated gaming. So I definitely agree with that. When it comes to this story, I find it quite interesting. You know, who's running up a $4.5 million credit line for an interpreter? I don't know if that's happening. Shohei's attorneys accuse the interpreter of theft. I know he's got a lot of money, but you know, you'd think you'd notice transfers coming out of your accounts, or at least your accountants would. I don't think the interpreter has, you know, sole access to Shohei Ohtani's bank accounts. So there's got to be more people involved. There's got to be something else happening here. You know, we'll reserve judgment till the story comes out. But you know, for me, the most obvious answer is usually the one right in front of you. And it looks like the baseball player had to have had knowledge of this. And we'll see if he was actually behind it or what the story was. But yeah, it's gonna take a lot of ink to get through this one. And it's curious to me how the story has already changed a couple of times. He didn't know about it, then he was helping a friend cover his debts. So it seems like the spin cycle has already started.
I think the danger too to the professional leagues is, you know, with MLB in particular, allowing players to wager on other sports but not baseball. Now this guy made $4.5 million of bets, or that's a lot of bets, and he says he didn't do anything on MLB. Now could the shoe drop and he did bet on some baseball? He says he didn't, but I mean, who's going through his bet history? I mean, that's one heck of a lot of bets, you know. So you're taking him at his word. So that's, I think, that the danger to the leagues, like, as I say, you know, MLB, you can't bet on baseball, but you can bet on other sports. You're getting into a, you know, a slippery slope there.
Yeah, I guess that begs the question. I don't know if the three of you, if you have an answer for this, but what is Major League Baseball's role in this? Like, what should Major League Baseball be doing? Again, they'll have integrity partners. Should they conduct their own investigation? Like, any thoughts on that, Amanda?
Hopefully not taking a page from the Pinto investigation that the NHL undertook. I think, you know, not to sort of directly answer that question, but I think just to raise the other fear that this industry has and continues to suffer from many slings and arrows, because it continues to be not well understood or not well explained by, you know, the people who are setting the standards and enforcing the standards. So my only fear is, now that you've got a second league that has now wandered into potential, you know, gambling problems, players, you know, associated with, you know, problem gambling, I hope it doesn't start raising the whole issue of, you know, use your imaginations. Where could this go? Like, ban all advertising, ban all, you know, sponsorships, ban all, you know, associations. You know, this is a bad industry. This is a horrible industry. This industry, you know, actively tries to, you know, turn people into degenerate gang, like, you know where it all can go. So that's my only fear right now, is that we've now had two leagues that have been publicly dragged into this. So the response, I'm hoping, on the MLB side is going to be serious and thorough, which is the best you can hope for.
Yeah,
well, you're guilty by association, you know. So I think I will not be surprised at all if MLB is going to go to an outright ban on wagering for players or anyone associated with a player, like the other leagues have done.
That was, Amanda, that was actually going to be my next question, just asking you to put on your crisis communications cap. And if you are the American Gaming Association and you know, perhaps even the Canadian Gaming Association, do you want to get out in front of this story? And is there a positive spin to put on this? That, again, this is why regulated gambling is important, because it does have this checks and balances and puts these guardrails in place.
Yeah, and that is sort of the one side of it. The other side of it is the hammer comes down again, and you end up with more restrictions, less freedom. You know, operators see more of their, you know, ability to advertise or market chipped away. You know, we were going to talk about the college prop bets. You know, you just see more sweeping regulations come down on the industry, and when you see those kinds of heavy, you know, that heavy-handedness land, you know, and you still have a black market like we do in Ontario and through Canada and through parts of the US, what you end up doing is just driving part of your customer base into the arms of black market operators who do not have those same sorts of restrictions imposed on them. So there's two definite sides to this.
Hey, Chris Abbott, any thoughts from you in terms of messaging or ways the industry might want to react to this?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm, you know, on the side of the champions of regulated sports betting in the state of California, this is certainly one for me. So, you know, I'd use it in that regard. I think it speaks back to our topic we've talked about a lot of times is education, right? But at the end of the day, I think, you know, what I see happening is regardless of what happened, you've got the most recognizable baseball player on the face of the earth tied into this. You're going to see his friend be the fall guy, whether it's all him or partially him or not at all him. And if this was a, you know, a fringe MLB player, he'd probably get suspended for a year. The MLB is not going to suspend Shohei Ohtani for a year, I don't think. If they do, it's a huge loss for them. So there's some people scrambling this morning, and there's certainly a lot more information to come out. But as we said a couple of minutes ago, at a minimum, he's helping cover gambling losses, you know, to a guy who was employed by a Major League Baseball team. That's the minimum that's happening here.
It felt, I guess, another way to put it, too, is that this, you know, at the end of the day, you have a, there's a human story here, too, where you have a guy, if it's true, he's amassed $4.5 million in gambling debts and needed help from a rich buddy to pay them off. That's a piece of the puzzle, and that's something that just doesn't happen in the professional sports realm. I mean, this happens across all walks of life, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of people that lose a lot of money in gaming. Yes, it's a, you know, a small percentage of, you know, of what we take, you know, in bets across the industry and have for the last couple of decades. But still, I mean, that's one heck of a lot of money. Again, I go to, it's just the association with the league now. It's just, you know, guilty by association, and they want, I mean, that's what we've been trying to steer clear of, and here it is. You know, it's coming up again and again. They really, the leagues have to, you know, stand on that. Like you know, I think the NFL, the NHL, and NBA, if you're a player or anyone associated with a player, you can't wager on anything. If it's found out, you're gone. MLB has left that door open, right? You know, you can't bet on baseball, but you can bet on other sports. Again, go into his bet history. Maybe he was betting on baseball. Maybe probably he wasn't, but the inference is there that it's associated with baseball. And once you get that out into the media with a headline, as you know, people just read headlines. They don't look at the facts. As Amanda was saying, it's not, you know, it's not beneficial to what we do in the industry as a whole that, you know, is up and above board.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, don't forget that this is a story of a problem gambler too, which no one, you know, no one ever wants to see. And it sounded like he was probably trying to keep this on the down low, and he was ashamed of it. So there's the human element of this as well, which is this person has now had their name dragged through the media and their life is probably going to be ruined and their livelihood removed from them. And, you know, Shohei Ohtani in the ESPN article I read at least initially referred to him as a friend who's like a brother who knows by the time tomorrow's story comes out, he could be a distant, you know, acquaintance that he barely knew. But I think, you know, the human element to that is also, you know, as Chris said, you know, I'd be jumping up and down to get some regulations in place because in addition to all the checks and balances, operators who work in regulated markets have something called affordability, which means you're not able to go in and spend $4 million if you don't have that kind of disposable income at your fingertips, right? So it is really an argument on two sides. One, as Phil was saying, closing that loophole on the MLB side. But on the second hand, you know, this is what happens when you don't have a regulated market. You know, bookies flourish. And, you know, if that's acceptable to you, especially with, you know, a state the size of California with its population base and the prevalence of gaming activity in states that border and surround it. And, you know, the fact that you've got yet another example of someone who made really bad decisions and is now paying the ultimate consequence for it, then yeah. You know, hopefully at some point in time, some attitudes change.
We lose the human element in this sometimes. You know, we're trying to protect the industry and make the industry, more robust and safe and that. But so you lose the human element of these people that actually do have, you know, gambling problems. And that gets lost in the argument. Any tier one book, you know, that I know, or certainly one I've worked at or ones I've been associated with in the KYC, it would have came up that he was associated with Ohtani and they never would have took his action, or, you know, they shouldn't have. Anyways.
We're recording this podcast just before lunch on Thursday Eastern time. So just quickly going through Major League Baseball's Twitter feed and there's no reaction to this story yet from Major League Baseball. And I think to Amanda's point, hopefully there is a lesson to be learned from the NHL's investigation into Shane Pinto. Because Amanda, I think there's still a lot of, you know, rumors and stories out there and we still don't really know exactly what happened, although I'm sure Shane Pinto has told a multitude of people, including his teammates on the Ottawa Senators, what happened. And again, I think we all agree that was a missed opportunity by the league.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at this point, you know, it's, you know, we're all collectively letting sleeping dogs lie. And it's that, again, as passionate and as proud as I am about this industry, it's not one that people necessarily want to be associated with publicly. And especially not for having done something wrong or transgressed a regulation or a standard. So I think, you know, there's probably at least among the senators now a high awareness of, you know, what not to do when it comes to sports betting and gambling.
Yeah, Amanda mentioned a few minutes ago about college prop betting, and that was one of the topics I wanted to cover today. And that's with March Madness starting in the next hour, I guess. We have seen in the U.S. and in certain states a ban on prop betting of college sports, obviously targeting March Madness with both the men's and women's tournaments over the next 3 weekends. Chris Abbott, we'll start with you. I mean, as I mentioned in our email and our podcast pre-briefing earlier in the week, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of conversation around this. And one of the thoughts is that it's fine. You can ask regulated sports books to ban prop betting on college sports, but all that's going to do is drive bettors to offshore or illegal operators. Is it as black and white as that?
We've talked in this podcast before about overregulation, right? And so to me, if I'm a sportsbook operator and there's, you know, an endless amount of games going on with players that most people haven't heard of, and those who are betting individual props probably have some inside information, then I choose not to offer that. And I offer the main, you know, this is Phil will be able to tell you even, you know, better than I can, but you know, I choose as an operator not to offer that, and then that's my decision. But when it happens as you know, you're told across the board, no, you can't do this, then yes, that does have the unintended consequence of sending people to look for where they can find it, and maybe Mr. What was it? Boyer might be able to offer some college props as well. But I think that's, to me, that's what that says. Now, you know, we've talked about young players that can be influenced before. We've seen it in NCAA, that, you know, the Arizona State example from years ago. So, you know, I see where the intention is coming from, but there could also be unintended consequences there. Yeah, that's my take on that.
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, on the tier, as Chris was saying, you know, in the tier one industry, I mean, if you have any sense of, you know, bookmaking at all, you know, there's stuff you just don't offer. I mean, the power rankings are not there to come up with a consensus number, so you don't have a consensus market. You know, if I'm looking at the board today for a number of the games, and there's very few college props there because you just can't come up with a solid number. And the ones that you do, limits are quite low. You're not going to be able to get down, or at least, again, any responsible bookmaker is not going to let you get down, you know, 5 or 6 figure bets on that. So, you know, the implication there that there could be a fix in it is so low. And you look across now what the states, you know, what states can offer college props, but which ones can't. It's contradictory. It's, you know, it's a little all over the place. Like, go to Connecticut. You can't bet on in-state teams on games, but you can bet on outrights for the tournament. So you can't bet on UConn game, but you can bet them to win the outright tournament. Seems, you know, it's a little weird. I just don't see where there's, you know, the danger within, you know, again, the tier one industry for any sort of fix to be in, or anybody approaching players to throw, you know, their point total of that. Yes, now you can. They are there in the offshore market where those books are willing to hang their own number and take bets. So the states have, you know, NCAA has no control over, you know, an outside bookmaker. So yeah, I get there again. You know, it's a news item for the NCAA too. And actually, maybe good on them that, you know, again, I go back to that guilty by association. Let's just eliminate the problem altogether and don't let them have college player props. But you can bet on the game. So, I mean, a player can throw the game just as easily as he can throw his point total. So I don't, yeah, it's a little all over the place.
And man, to Phil's point, it seems that this is an easy move, given, you know, the industry in the U.S. is facing a bit of heat right now, and seems to be a new study every week on problem gambling among college students, and the college students are in debt because of their sports betting or gaming habits. It was just an easy way for regulators to try and appease some people.
Well, you look at how Ontario launched with its sports betting standards, and from the get-go, you were never allowed to offer any odds on CHL games. So I kind of look at the NCAA as kind of, you know, the U.S. equivalent of our CHL. And from a complete integrity standpoint, integrity of the market, integrity of the operators, integrity of, you know, the sport, it's much cleaner that way. And I don't think if you surveyed a whole bunch of, you know, a whole bunch of people, you'd get a consensus that it's a good idea to have props on college games. You know, they're getting younger and younger as they move into college. And, you know, when you look at where match manipulation and match fixing happens, it's, you know, at lower tier athletes who aren't earning a lot of money. And I think it's just a clean, easy piece of low hanging fruit. That just, again, from the overall integrity of the sport and the industry, it should just be a blanket ban. So that's just my opinion.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
Hey, Chris, I mean, Amanda makes a great point. On the other hand, we know how sports fans and sports bettors look at NCAA sports and basketball and football in particular. And I think the American Gaming Association put out something earlier this week that there's going to be, I'm hoping I'm right, the number is close to $3 billion bet on March Madness. And so for operators, it certainly is big business. So how do you walk that line of doing what's good for your business? But as Amanda points out, there are some red flags there in terms of college athletics. And I think that's a great comparison Amanda makes with comparing NCAA sports to the Canadian Hockey League.
So I think one thing we often neglect to put in perspective here is that 95% of the people who are betting on any of these games are betting $5, $10, $20, you know, dollars. Those folks are not the concern, and they are the prime target demographic for most regulated operators, right? All of the things that we're talking about is really to slow down a very, you know, overall small amount of people, but a large amount of money. So Phil's talked about it in this space before. What do? You just limit how much you accept on these games, right? And the operators have to measure their profit motivations. I won't say greed, because it's not greed. You're in business to make money. But at some point, there has to be a protection level for both sides of the industry. You know, you don't want to accept huge sums on potentially games that have been manipulated, but also you don't want to, you know, keep your players from having their recreational fun. So there's a happy balance in there somewhere. And I know it's a drum that Phil beats often. And that's what I think is probably a really effective solution here. And that doesn't have to be mandated by a regulator. That's just good business practice if you're a bookmaker.
Phil, do you want to beat that drum one more time?
What? Yeah, it's not, well, I mean, perhaps it could be a bit of greed, but yes, you are running a business. A standardization on limits on both sides of the win-loss ratio is going to have to be forced on the sports books. They're not going to do it themselves. It's going to come, I think. You know, it has in a lot of European markets. I think we're still probably a couple of years away from a legislative initiative to force it on sports books. But until that time, you're going to have even tier one books that will accept, you know, large bets on from some clients on sports that they perhaps should not. The CHL was, we'll go back to that the ban in Ontario was due to the number of underage players that could be in the CHL. So they decided on a blanket ban on that for regular season, the playoffs, Memorial Cup. But interestingly enough, Ontario will allow sports on the World Junior Hockey Championships because there's a small number of underage players there. I think at last year's WJHC, there was 11 underage players in the entire tournament, but they allowed bets on that. So again, you get into, you know, some contradictory rules as the industry grows a little. I think you'll see a tightening, and limits will be in that as well.
It comes back to just also the, you know, like we talk a lot about like athlete education and, you know, what kind of training and education are athletes getting? Are they aware of what the potential problems could be? So, you know, just to maybe walk back a bit of my blanket ban, but I think it's beholden now given, you know, where we are in terms of media exposure, you know, and the industry's interest and, to Chris's point, the bettors' interest in this, the majority who are going to be compliant, you know, what kind of education, knowledge sharing are the schools doing with their younger athletes too? Because that is also, you know, you talk to any of the U.S. integrities or the IBIAs, that's, you know, one of the first lines of defense is just equipping your athletes. But again, you know, I don't live in the U.S. I don't really follow March Madness. It's not an interest of mine. So, you know, who knows where this is going to go? But, you know, you're now looking at this on top of, you know, the Ohtani story that is breaking. So God help us if there's one bad thing that happens during March Madness with a young athlete and something. Like, it's just going to be, the knives are going to come out for us.
Hey, Phil, just quickly on that, just put on your trader's cap for a second. And we're actually, Bob Copeland from McLaren Global Solutions is going to be on a podcast next week to talk about the white paper that McLaren just released this week with the Canadian Center for Ethics and Sports. And one of the recommendations is more more education for athletes around sports betting and match manipulation. You know, when you talk about underage athletes in the Canadian Hockey League, Phil, like we have a Summer Olympics coming up in Paris in August. And again, I'm not sure what the rules have been in the past, but we do know that certain sports really lend themselves to younger athletes. I mean, will there be restrictions placed on certain Olympic sports, like women's gymnastics, for example, where you do tend to have, you know, 14 to 18 year olds competing?
I highly doubt it. To go to the letter of, at least in Ontario, to go to the letter of their rule. It's a little fuzzy where they, I think I can't quote the rule exactly, but it's a reasonable percentage of players or athletes are not under the legal age. So what reasonable means, I do not know. But we go to Chris's point especially the Olympics. There's just so many of those sports. There's no way an operator who's, you know, has any clue is going to offer, especially the judged events and that. I mean, because that's where you can get into a real problem, you know, with the manipulation is in the judging. So the Olympics are really hard to book. I'm actually one of the times I'm going to be glad I'm not a bookie, because they're just a headache.
And Bill, just one more question quickly on the Olympics. Again, like sports like gymnastics and swimming have certainly been really popular with media in Canada, the U.S. And in Canada right now, we have a 16-year-old swimmer, Summer McIntosh, who's setting the international swimming community on fire with her performances. Again, is Olympic swimming a sport that – is that something books will offer in Paris?
Yeah, because it falls under a type of sport where there's a result. You know, you can point to a result and grade a bet as that is, you know, actually on a timed result. When you get into gymnastics, what you'll generally see is to win the gold medal, to win the silver, to win the bronze. You won't see on specific events, a wager on heats and events like that. It's more an outright. You need a specific result, and the timing too. The heats are changed. The times and that, so you can get nailed a lot of times with bets are left up late, just becomes a massive headache. So that's behooving on the operator to maintain that.
Good stuff. Let's move on. I want to talk, probably the rest of the show on Ontario. And we're coming up next month will be the second anniversary of the open marketplace in the province where Amanda, Chris and I live. And as Amanda mentioned, we reminded us off camera of her former employer, Unibet. They will be out of the market effective next Wednesday, March 26th. Amanda, correct?
That is correct. Yep.
Maybe start with you, Amanda. I may have missed it while I was away, but I haven't seen any other announcements from operators looking to pull out of the market here. Have you heard anything new?
No, but I think what you'll see as the year goes on had always sort of been my suspicion that you'll just see some licenses not being renewed. You've already got some of the biggest operators in the market who've re-upped for, you know, another year or two up until 2026. So that's already happened. But, you know, again, I think I've shared this before. My opinion is you've got a lot of tiny operators who might have under 1,000 monthly actives, which isn't a lot. They're probably making the most of their money in the rest of Canada. So as gray market operators, they're not paying taxes, they're not doing audits, they're not, you know, compliance costs are a bare minimum. So they're able to fund their activities in Ontario, you know, with the money they're making outside of Ontario. Now, imagine Alberta decides to open in the next year and they're now going to have to pay GGR in a second province, which is a, you know, pretty hefty population size. So it's going to be a big province. How many of those are going to be able to afford to give that up? So now you're not making money in two provinces. So I think what you'll see is, you know, a confluence of different factors coming in. The fact that, you know, it's the second anniversary, we've got this FinTrack outage, which means operators aren't able to get any data uploaded. And, you know, because we don't have any automation, we've got what's called MVP, minimally viable product. Operators are really struggling under that burden right now. And, you know, you start adding on more, you know, changes coming from AGCO and, you know, changes in advertising and the way they can acquire customers and who they can use to acquire customers. And then you add on another province opening up, and they'll have to pull out of that province because you can't be a licensed operator in a regulated province and then still try and be a gray market operator in a newly regulated province. So I think what you'll see is, you know, the confluence, a whole bunch of things coming, and those smaller operators are just going to get knocked out. But I also know there's other operators preparing to launch. So, you know, it's just going to be the way this market's going to go. Some will decide that now's the right time to jump in, and they'll be quite happy making a percent or two of the market share. And others are just going to just throw in the towel because it's expensive to be here.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, are you surprised that, to Amanda's point, that there are still operators that want to come into this market in Ontario and want to launch?
Yeah, kind of. I guess it's you know, the average player revenue is pretty high, or average revenue per player is pretty high. And, you know, I've seen some recent numbers in the market. There was such huge growth in the first year of regulated activity here. The second year still grew, but nowhere near at the same rate as the first year. So to Amanda's point, I think we're seeing a little bit of a settling in now, and what will be sustainable, what will be palatable, you know, for each individual operator. I think, yeah, if you're okay with having a really small piece of a really big pie, and that's good for you and your interests, and maybe you're a private company, but some of the publicly held companies that have to report results, if they don't see, you know, continued growth and see this as a market where they can continually make profit, then we're going to see some decisions made. I mean, it's been a really tumultuous couple of years in the industry, you know, with mergers and acquisitions and, you know, missed targets. And so I think all that stuff will continue to happen until we see the, you know, the downsizing that's going to come.
And watch across the border too, because there's an iCasino bill in New York, right? So imagine New York State finally gets its casino product, you know, available, and operators can start offering that. You know, again, going back to the stuff that's not so sexy or exciting to talk about, you've got operators here who are spending a lot of time and resources, including employees, on just, you know, AML and compliance, and they know that they can make twice the money with, you know, a third of the staff just across the border from us. You know, that might not be such a hard decision for them to say, thanks, it's been fun, but, you know, we can make more money with less people, you know, spend less money to make more money, you know. And I would not be surprised if we see, you know, what we would consider to be a big operator making that decision in the next year.
Phil, do you want to get in on this?
Yeah, I'm actually doing a little bit of consulting for an international company that's established in the country that they're in. They've been making noises about wanting to come to North America, and they have platform, and you know, they have good potential. But as far as my advice, as far as the sports book was forget it. But certainly bring your casino. So that's kind of where I'm at with them now. I think what you're going to see too is, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm hearing some rumblings, you know, about some very large companies that are going to start to downsize a little bit and get rid of some of their white labels and bring them back all under the mothership. So you may see some brands disappear there that, you know, that they're brand only, they're white label, they're operated by the parent company. I think you may see some of those disappear and those clients will be transferred over to the number one company.
Hey, Amanda, you make such a great point about New York, and I just wonder, you know, we still don't have regulated sports betting or iGaming in Texas, California, and Florida, two huge states, and I just wonder, like, given your comments about resources and the burdens that the regulatory environment in Ontario places, so like, where, if there is a day down the road, and I'm sure there will be, where we see all the big U.S. states have regulated gambling industries, like, where does Ontario fit? Is it Ontario still an attractive place for operators to be, or is there a chance we could see, you know, a real shrinking of the market here?
You know, it's an interesting question, Steve, because it's not just Unibet who's pulling out of North America. You know, we read the same media, like 888 is reexamining things, you know, Entain's, you know, making some noises now. There's going to be further consolidation. And, you know, the U.S., quite frankly, could end up being, you know, just a handful of really big U.S.-based operators blanketing the whole entire state. So I think that from the standpoint of the really big operators, you know, operating in the States is on some hands attractive because it's not as cumbersome in terms of the compliance side of things, but also, you know, you're having to switch gears between regulations across, you know, I think there's about 21 different states right now that have some form of sports betting or multi-product legislation in place. So that's also a lot of switching back and forth because every state is going to do things a little bit differently and you really have to be on your toes to be able to navigate, you know, back and forth and across all of that. So, you know, the joy at some point would be that you're able to, you know, kind of streamline some of that. But again, I'm not an expert on U.S. regulation or the U.S. Sports betting and iGaming industry, but I think it is probably a potential risk for Ontario that some of the bigger U.S.-based operators will decide that there's just more gold in those hills across the border from us than there are here in this province.
Absolutely agree with Amanda. My crystal ball for that, you will see it, I think, in the not too distant future. You're going to see four or five, half a dozen big books that are going to control the entire market. And you'll see very little of, you know, the mom and pop stuff that we see now. And it'll go to, you know, the big department store chains sort of thing. And you'll see, I think you'll see a lot of some of those books go back to the gray market.
Right. Hey, Chris Abbott, I want to go to you here. And we're about a month into now the new Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario standards around advertising and marketing dollars involving the use of athletes. And I think while I was away last week, BetMGM put out a Connor McDavid ad that was a responsible gambling messaging ad. I haven't had a chance to see the ad, but I guess I'll ask my question for you, Chris, is are you surprised that BetMGM did this? And again, this is something I spoke with Jeff Jackson, Connor's former agent, when this deal was announced, I guess 2+ years ago now. And said RG was going to be top of mind, but yet, you know, it took almost 2 years for an RG ad to be put out to market.
So I won't say that I'm surprised or not surprised. I don't know the ins and outs of their contract with him, but what I do know is that they have to spend, you know, percentage of their GGR, gross gaming revenue, on RG advertising. And if they can use some of the cost of their deal with Connor McDavid to say they're, applying that, then that's good, right? And listen, the ad itself is pretty good. I think I was watching Big Brother, and I saw it come on, and I was like, oh, okay. So it, you know, wasn't on a sports channel, and it was, you know, I thought it was good. I thought it was tasteful. I thought the message hit home. So, listen, I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see it, to be honest.
Amanda, any thoughts? Have you seen anything that's caught your eye or caused your ears to perk up in the first month of the new standards?
I'm still trying to digest the fact that Chris Abbott watches Big Brother. I don't know. I'm just trying to turn that one over in my brain. No, I haven't seen the ad like Chris, but good on Connor, good on BetMGM, because we knew that there was going to be some pivoting with existing contracts with existing athletes. And I've said in the past, you know, you hope that the athlete that is going to be in these commercials is comfortable delivering that kind of a message and that it's not something that feels forced or stilted. So great that BetMGM has been able to do that. I haven't seen the Jamie Foxx or the Wayne Gretzky versions of those ads yet. Maybe they're coming, maybe they're not. But, you know, I know that, you know, we were watching the game last weekend, 2 weeks ago, and there were still Bodog ads on TSN. So Bell is still running Bodog ads. I know in conversations with some of the agents for some of the athletes that, you know, some operators were looking to, you know, dissolve contracts because they just didn't feel that the athlete was going to be a strong enough association with RG. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that there's a bit of a slow start to this. And I think operators will be in a better position this time next year in terms of their athletic talent and RG. Chris is right. There is a mandatory RG spend for all operators. They have reports due the first week of May to IGO on what they did and how it resonated. So, you know, I think they're just finding their sea legs right now, and we'll have a better sense this time next year.
And I need to defend myself. Okay. So I was watching Big Brother the first two episodes to make sure one of my clients were getting their marketing assets as were promised. The rest of them, my fiance decided we were now into Big Brother. So it's Big Brother Canada at that. I remember.
Listen, when... no judgment, Chris.
Oh, you were judging.
No judgment.
That's what we do. That's what we always do when we get caught watching those shows. We blame it on the girlfriend or the wife, man.
Well, there's so many TikTok reels and Instagram about Love is Blind, right? How the husband has no interest and then he's like super into it and making the popcorn. And yeah, that trash TV can really end sometimes. Not the Big Brother's trash. I think you're great.
Hey, Phil, listen, my wife and I got turned on The Voice during our vacation, and we're hooked on it now. So my PBR, I think I'm overloading it right now on my television. So there you go.
I was watching Farmer Wants a Wife the other night with my girlfriend. I kid you not. It's called Farmer Wants a Wife.
I thought that was an app.
Well, that we may have to do a separate podcast on all this, folks. Hey, man, I want to just quickly get into hoping you can update us on the latest around liquidity and daily fantasy sports and where that might be headed.
Yeah, watch this space. It was something that was raised at the Canadian Gaming Summit last year with Attorney General Doug Downey, the fact that this was a hangover from the market launching, and he was quick to respond. So it took a bit of time, but the province has gone to court to put that question about the legality of allowing international liquidity. So to be clear, they're not asking about other provinces in Canada. It's really about international, which would be definitely welcome news for DFS and for anyone offering poker. But I don't think we're going to see a decision until next year. So it's not something that's going to come quickly. But the good news is the province has taken that up and the question has been asked. So, yeah, watch the space. And, you know, as news is known, we'll be sure to report it here.
Phil, Chris, anything you want to add to that?
No, actually, I would weigh in because, you know, I like to get on the other side of these things, Steve, the Conor McGregor responsible gaming ad.
No, oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, okay. So, I mean, we're going to have a ban on celebrity endorsements. But, I mean, if you're doing responsible gaming ad, you're still doing an endorsement. So, again, I've used it many times today, guilty by association. So you're sitting there watching a Conor McDavid ad, you know, and he's telling you he loves betting and betting is great, but be careful about it. I fail to see the difference between he's got a message in there, but it's still there. I mean, he's still front and center in a glossy ad promoting a sports book. But he's telling you to be careful about it. I just think it's silly and contradictory. That's all.
Hey, Chris, you want to respond to that?
No, Phil, you know, everybody's got to reach an agreement that everyone is happy. It's not dictated. It's negotiated. And then, the other topic, the liquidity one. We often talk about sports and daily fantasy, but there's also a casino element to the liquidity piece. You know, jackpots that are offered across providers and across countries, poker as well. So it's, I think it would be welcome. I think it'd be very welcome should we be able to get to a point where, you know, the Ontario residents can compete in these big prize pools as well. But I do see the reason for restricting it, and it's really tough to keep controls on, you know, because you can't control what other countries are doing, what other operators are doing, who happen to have the same casino and sportsbook provider as a regulated one. So, yeah, it's super tricky. It's super tricky. But I think ultimately it would be great for the consumer at the end of the day.
Daily Fantasy is having, I mean, boy, they're having major problems. Well, hurdles and new issues coming up every day in the United States. I was working with an operator down there. They operate in Canada. They do not operate in Ontario, but they are operating in the rest of Canada. It's going to be a complex issue when if it does come to Ontario. It's becoming increasingly complex in the United States.
Yeah, speaking of complex, Phil, there was coverage this week out of Florida where, you know, there's the legality of March Madness brackets and pools is being questioned, and that just I just don't know how do you police that. I mean, I just think that's really getting into the weeds there, and I mean, I'm below a casual bettor, and I've played a number of March Madness pools over the years. I don't know how you ever start to regulate that.
No, you can't. And I mean, we had multiple requests over the years at Sports Interaction from clients wanting to bet on brackets. I refuse to ever, you know, have it on a site. You can't now in Ontario legally. But yeah, you get into that. And you look, let's go back. I mean, I was working with an operator in the States, DFS, and boy, they're chasing their tails right now in every state. Every state has a different law, and you know, the big books, you know, like DraftKings and that started on that are offering it, are challenging all these smaller operators. So you're going to see the same thing in Canada when it comes here. If it does, it gets messy.
Hey man, I just want to finish with just a little bit of news this week from iGaming Ontario that there's an RFP out now for a centralized self-exclusion solution. And maybe you can just put that into layman's terms for us before we wrap up here.
So this was something that for operators who came into the market in the first year, they were aware that IGO was looking to have a province-wide self-exclusion program offered. So again, good news that the RFP is out. It's taken a bit longer than anyone would have wanted, but good news, the RFP is out. The issue right now is, you know, you're playing with, let's just say, we'll pick on BetMGM. You're playing on BetMGM's website. You've decided you need to self-exclude, but you can go down the street and you can knock on PointsBet's door and you can open an account very easily. So the whole point is, you know, from, again, the integrity of the market, protection of customers, protection of operators in the industry, far, far better of a safety net to have one single self-exclusion. So if you are a problem gambler, you can self-exclude from every operator who's in the market. Now, I have not gone through the RFP, Steve. It just landed yesterday. You have to go into Merck's to pull it. There's a bunch of accompanying appendices. The hope, too, is that it can cover also the land-based, because you do have operators like Fallsview and Mohegan Sun who are both land-based operator and an online operator. And there have already been instances where an online customer has self-excluded, but then they've walked into the casino to continue and gamble. So we are unique that way, that we have a very holistic industry here. In Ontario, we've got almost every facet of gaming on offer. So hopefully this is a solution that will cover both the land-based and online. But like I said, I haven't gone in to look at the details, so we'll see. But that is the hope, that, you know, given a successful RFP, a successful respondent, there'll be something that gets designed so that operators can link up on this side of things and customers can then have, like I said, that safety net for them.
Final thoughts, Chris Abbott, anything March Madness related you want to mention?
No, it's not such a big thing for me, to be honest with you, but I'm so ingrained in football and hockey and baseball that basketball really takes a seat for me. Listen, it's a huge time of year for sports books. There'll be plenty of activity. If you're a sports fan that likes to bet, March Madness is set up in the perfect way, with just games starting on a staggered schedule all day, all weekend. You know, for me, that's something when that happens with the NHL, I'm so happy. When that happens with baseball, I'm so happy. And the NFL on Sundays, of course. But it really is a dream for people who do like to sit down, dedicate a day with the guys, bet on this, bet on that. So it's a lot of fun. So if you haven't done it, try it, but don't ever think that you know anything about college basketball is what I say at the end of the day, because there's so many upsets. You don't watch these teams all year. You don't know these players. So it's a lot of fun. And to Amanda's point back then about the centralized self-exclusion, look, this shouldn't be something that's too hard to implement. Sure, they need a provider and everyone needs to get aligned, but everyone has to do KYC up front. You should mostly have to show your ID anytime you walk into a casino. It's a quick scan, and if you pop up, then it's a no-go. So, you know, this should be straightforward, and it is a protection. I know people personally that have self-excluded from one website, gone back to another, and it's actually created just this cycle of frustration and then a new hope. You know what I mean? So if you're a person that needs to self-exclude, you need to self-exclude from it all. And we need to provide that technology to make that happen.
Phil Gray, last word.
Yeah, we had self-exclusion in place almost a decade ago, started then. And our security check client provider at the time, also, you know, as part of a client report that client's info went through, listed if they were excluded at another book. And we would then, you know, refuse their action or put them under, you know, a very close watch. As far as March Madness, it's still way bigger in the States here. You know, people in Canada, sportsbooks, still it's big business, but it's a much smaller percentage of bettors that hit it here in Canada. In play is huge here in Canada, much bigger than pregame. It's also, you know, If you're a sharp bettor or somebody has any clue or likes to hit value or off numbers, it's the best time of the year to get booted or limited by a sports book.
And Amanda, I'll give you the final word.
So if we don't regroup next week, happy Easter. I know it's weird. It's in March. I don't understand how in 2024 we're still looking at phases of the moon or, you know, lunar patterns to figure out when this holiday falls. But anyway. Happy Easter, and looking forward to regrouping in early April.
Yeah, for sure, Amanda. Me too. It's no surprise that the best shows that we do here at Gaming News Canada usually involve these three people. So, as always, so grateful to Amanda Brewer, Phil Gray, and Chris Abbott for sharing their insight and information and keeping us posted on what's going on around the gambling industry. So yes, happy Easter to the three of you as well. Look forward to getting you back on the podcast in April. As always, you can find this podcast at gamingnewscanada.ca or on the various our social media platforms on the platform formerly known as Twitter and LinkedIn. We're striving to do two of these podcasts a week, and again, we think there's a lot of value, especially when we get Amanda, Phil, and Chris together. So please, everybody, enjoy the weekend. As I look out my window, it's snowing here on the shore of the lake here in today. So if you're on the roads, be careful, and especially be careful driving next week on the Easter long weekend. Take care, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada Show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.